Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And I'm going to start with an article from a book that my children gave me when I turned 80. 80 Things to Do When You Turn 80. And this article is called Be All You Can Be, and it's by Robert Landry, who is a preventative medicine physician and author. There is no sugarcoating it. Aging is about loss. We lose friends to geography, to sickness, or to different life paths. We lose abilities, both physical and intellectual. It's as if we are no longer really being seen and heard. We become invisible. Okay, before you slit your wrists, please note, loss doesn't have to be the whole story. As long as we have a pulse, we can grow. We can grow physically, actually building vitality and resilience. We can improve our memory and reduce the likelihood of ever having the symptoms of dementia. We can, in fact, significantly alter the trajectory of our aging experience so that we live our lives at the highest level of functioning possible until our time is up. Me? I want to age like a leaf. I want to get more colorful as I age. I want to blend with others to make more beauty than I can alone. And when my time comes, hopefully, I'll just fall off the tree. No long chronic loss, no expensive long decline, and no loss of independence and dignity. So how do I plan to do this? The research is clear. It's been more than 20 years now since the seminal work that smashed the stereotype of aging first came to light. The MacArthur Foundation's 10-year-long study on aging clearly showed us that it's not genes or fate or serendipity that mostly determines how we age. It is lifestyle, the choices we make every day that play the major role, up to 70%, in what our aging journey looks like. All subsequent research has validated the finding that how we age is mostly up to us. At this point, you're assuming I'm going to launch into a sermon about exercising more, losing weight, and eating better. Not exactly. I'm first going to talk about our distant ancestors. Since humans have walked the earth, in fact, about 99% of the time we've been around, we lived a radically different lifestyle, one that, despite marked advancement in our societies, is what we still require to be healthy and age well. Nothing exotic, nothing difficult, nothing expensive. This lifestyle of our hunter-gatherer ancestors that has been bequeathed to us is in our very DNA, but we're getting further and further from living it, and so we're suffering the consequences. Squeezing the most out of our lives, being all that we can be for as long as possible, like my leaf wish, is called, in public health terms, the compression of morbidity. Morbidity is when we're sick and impaired. We want to compress that time. Another growing concern for many is learning how to be vital until our time is up. It doesn't happen because we're lucky. Life has curveballs waiting for all of us. It's about how resilient we are to take life's hits and keep on trucking. Resilience comes from that simple lifestyle we all have written in our DNA. We don't have to become hunter-gatherers. We just have to make sure the key components are there. The path to your best. Any changes you plan to make have to be in small steps, or they will end up in the same bin with your New Year's resolutions of the past. What do you want to change? What's the smallest thing you can do to start moving toward that goal? That small thing is your goal. Achieve that and then take the next smallest step. Didn't make it? Set the goal back a bit. You cannot fail. By taking small, realistic bites, you can indeed eat the elephant. Now, the first thing you must do is to be all that you can be is to move. Notice I didn't say exercise. You can do that, but to begin a lifestyle that is based on movement, like our ancestors, you must begin to move naturally. Walking, climbing, bending, stretching, throughout the day. Think 10,000 steps a day. Next, be with people. Friends, family, new friends, friends of friends. Eat with them, walk with them, converse with them. Forgive them, care for them. Alone time is good, but isolation is deadly. Learn new things. Yes, forget fear of failure. Who cares? Be a beginner every day. Scare yourself by getting out of your comfort zone. You must find your purpose. You must have a reason to pop out of bed in the morning. Usually that involves other living things, people, animals, the environment. No purpose, no joie de vivre. And yes, eat a little less overall and eat more plants. Our bodies jump for joy on our ancestors' diet. Not rocket science. Come on now. That doesn't sound difficult, does it? You can do it. Then you'll be more likely to be able to do the other 79 things in this book. Live long and live well. Now, last time we started an article about the sexiest man still alive, George Clooney. On the cusp of 60, the practical joking husband, actor, activist, and father of three-year-old twins is starting to feel his age. But so far, he's got it covered, thank you. Even though he's still full Clooneying, he's thought about his mortality a lot more since that scooter accident in Sardinia in 2018 that should have killed him. Grant Heslov, his partner in Smokehouse Pictures since 2006, and friends since they met in a 1983 acting class, was right in front of him on a matching scooter. I heard that sound of metal on metal, Heslov recalls. I skidded my bike and dropped it, and he was prone on the ground. All I could think of was, oh my God, is he dead? Then people were taking pictures. It made me angry. I'm not a cynical guy, Clooney says, but I will always, always remember that moment because nobody was jumping to go call for help or coming to help. For them, the worst moment of my life was entertainment. But he doesn't feel like it was because he's a celebrity commodity, bought and sold dead or alive. It's because people have become full-time publicists of their own lives. People are getting killed because they're taking a shot of a car crash coming toward them. We're living in this world where everybody is trying to make themselves fascinating or important or something. When the reality is, put that phone down. Post-accident, he lives with a little more precision, a little more care. I'm not a particularly religious guy, so I have to be skeptical about an afterlife. But as you get older, you start thinking, well, wait a minute. It's very hard for me to say, once you're finished with this chassis that we're in, you're just done. My version of it is that you're taking that 1/100th of a pound of energy that disappears when you die, and you're jamming it right into the hearts of all the other people you've been close to. That energy tells me to put down my phone, buy real estate, shun pre-made salad dressing, write letters, repair my house, gather loved ones around a big circular table. I hate long rectangular tables because they cut off the conversation, he notes. And be curious. Be curious about others. Yes, George Clooney, for the third time, my wife and son are doing well. But mostly the wisdom I've gathered from Clooney is this on this day before Thanksgiving is to use my 1/100th of a pound to recklessly instill joy. When our Zoom session ended, my lovely wife, Cassandra, asked me if I was on a post-Clooney high. I asked if she meant because he's famous, and she said, no, of course not. It's because he's George Clooney and he makes you feel alive, big, important. It's an overwhelming feeling. In fact, Cassandra was so exhausted by it when he came for dinner a few years back that she might be the only woman in the world who did dishes to hint that George Clooney should leave her house. He was so unfamiliar with that signal that he didn't budge. 2 days after we talked, I played 2 minutes of my recorded Clooney Zoom for my 11-year-old son, Laszlo. I wanted to make sure we properly followed the new wisdom my guru imparted. One at the joyous epicenter of the bubble on the level between man and guy. I'll let Clooney explain. Quote, yesterday I taught Alexander to take a piece of banana, chew it up, and then spit it into a napkin. Then stand next to his mom, pretend to blow his nose into it, and look down until mama looks at it. Then eat it. It's just outrageously fun, Clooney says, leaning into the camera, laughing that familiar twinkle in his eye. It will be just as fun when Clooney and I get our grandkids to do it. So the author of this was Los Angeles-based journalist Joel Stein. He's the author of In Defense of Elitism, Why I'm Better Than You and You Are Better Than Someone Who Didn't Buy This Book. Now I'm going to move on to an article from the Essential Retirement Guide, Live Well on Less Than You Think. This article is entitled Social Security Claiming Strategies. A calculated approach to applying for benefits can make a big difference over time. No matter how much you've saved throughout your lifetime, chances are you're also counting on Social Security payments to see you through retirement. Those payments are guaranteed income you can rely on for the rest of your life, assuming you've got at least 10 years of work and Social Security taxes behind you. That's not guaranteed until you actually retire. What's not guaranteed until you actually retire is how much you'll receive. Some variables are beyond your control, such as the annual cost of living adjustment or lawmakers' decisions about whether to reduce or increase Social Security benefits. Beyond those elements, decisions you make throughout your career and during retirement will affect your monthly check for years to come. The primary consideration is how much money you earned over your career. That makes sense because the more you earn, the more you pay into Social Security up to certain limits. In 2020, the maximum monthly benefit for an individual who retires at 66 is $3,011, while the average is $1,503. The second factor is your age at retirement. The longer you wait, up to age 70, the larger your monthly benefit. Finally, if you do opt to receive benefits before reaching full retirement age and are also working, your benefits may take a temporary hit based on how much you're earning at work. It pays to delay. During your career, you can always take on more work to increase your Social Security contributions since your benefit is calculated based on your top 35 years of earned income. If you worked fewer than 35 years, unfortunately, you get a big fat zero next to each of those missing years, which reduces your benefits. But the easiest way to boost your Social Security benefits is by simply delaying retirement. It can be very tempting to tap into your Social Security when you first become eligible to do so at the ripe young age of 62, but doing so means foregoing a larger benefit later. Social Security determines full retirement age, or FRA, as somewhere between 66 and 67, depending on the year you were born. Tapping into your benefits before FRA means a reduction in those benefits, which can be substantial, as much as 30% less depending on the number of months before you reach FRA. Conversely, you can choose to delay benefits until after your FRA, which will increase your monthly check by as much as 32%, depending on how long you delay. Bear in mind, however, that there is no benefit to delaying past the age 70. In other words, claiming benefits early will give you a smaller check, but more checks over your lifetime. Claiming later gives you larger, but fewer checks. The choice that's right for you boils down to how long you expect to live, which most of us don't know. But if you're healthy and can find other ways to cover your expenses for as long as possible up to age 70, it may be worth the wait. Income from a job can affect your benefits, so you'll also need to decide whether and how long to keep working. A part-time job or side hustle can help you stay afloat financially in early retirement, but if you begin claiming Social Security benefits before FRA, that earned income could mean a reduction in your benefits. In this scenario, you haven't reached full retirement age and you're earning income, Social Security will deduct $1 from your benefit payments for each $2 you earn over a set amount, which is $18,240 in 2020. Note that you'll get that money back after you reach FRA, but you'll be paid in installments over 15 years. However, if you can wait until at least FRA to begin claiming, working part-time in retirement can potentially increase your benefits. If, for whatever reason, you don't have 35 years of work history, working for a few years means you'll have more earnings on which Social Security will calculate your benefits. Even a very part-time job can help boost your benefits when you decide to take them. Claiming strategies for couples. For married couples, deciding when each spouse should begin claiming Social Security can be a nuanced process. Factors to consider include any age difference between the couple, which spouse was a higher earner, and whether one spouse has a limited work history. Members of a couple who have both claimed their benefits will automatically receive either their own benefit or 50% of their spouse's benefit, whichever is higher. If only one spouse has filed, he or she will receive only their own benefit until the other spouse files, at which point this deeming filing rule applies. Individuals born before January 2, 1954 have the option to choose between taking their spousal benefit at FRA while letting their own benefit grow until the age 70 and then switching. Widows and widowers of any birth date can do the same once they reach the age of 60. Divorced couples can also claim benefits from their ex-spouses, provided the marriage lasted at least 10 years, the divorce was at least 2 years ago, the spouse claiming benefits has not remarried, the spouse whose benefits are being claimed has reached age 62. Note, the ex-spouse with the benefits doesn't need to start claiming them first. Also, the ex-spouse's claims won't reduce his or her own benefits. In families in which one spouse earned significantly more than the other, the lower-earning spouse may choose to start claiming his or her benefits at FRA, while the higher-earning spouse puts off claiming until age 70. This strategy is especially useful if the spouse's age difference is relatively large. If possible, a higher-earning spouse should consider delaying benefits until age 70 to take advantage of the increased benefits mentioned. In addition to increasing the monthly Social Security benefit, this approach also increases benefits for the surviving spouse. When one member of the couple dies, the surviving spouse can elect to receive the deceased spouse's full Social Security income as a survivor benefit in lieu of his or her own benefits. If the higher-earning spouse dies first, this provision can create a valuable source of income for the survivor. Taking Social Security benefits early or late depends on many factors, from your health to your spouse's benefits to your other savings. The Social Security Administration website, ssa.gov, provides many helpful calculators you can use on your own. But it's a good idea to get advice on your specific circumstances from a financial planner or a tax professional. Now, from the Health Immunity magazine, let's take a quick look at the awesome way tattoos may boost your health. Yes, getting inked up might make you look tough on the outside, but research shows it may also make your body stronger on the inside. Science shows there are plenty of easy ways to build a stronger immune system on a daily basis, including working out, staying hydrated, and even listening to music. Not usually mentioned on this list? Getting a sleeve of tattoos. But according to a 2016 study published online in the American Journal of Human Biology, Getting multiple tattoos can actually strengthen your immunological responses, making it easier for your body to ward off illness. We know, crazy, right? The researchers hypothesized that the immune system responds to the stress of tattoos when done over and over again. For the study, researchers analyzed saliva samples from 24 women and 5 men before and after their tattoo sessions, measuring levels of immunoglobulin A, an antibody that lines portions of our gastrointestinal and respiratory systems and is a front line of defense against common infections like colds. They also looked at the levels of cortisol, a stress hormone known to suppress the immune response. As expected, they found that those who were relatively new to tattoos or were receiving their first one experienced a significant drop in their immunoglobulin A levels due to heightened stress. In comparison, they found that those who had more tattoo experiences, determined by number of tattoos, amount of time they spent getting tattooed, how many years since their first tattoo, the percentage of their bodies covered, and the number of tattoo sessions, experienced an elevation in immunoglobulin A. So while getting one tat can make you more susceptible to getting sick because your body's defenses are lowered, multiple tattoos can do just the opposite. We think of tattooing like exercise. The first time you exercise after much sloth, it kicks your butt. You can even be more susceptible to catching a cold, said Christopher Lynn, Ph.D., associate professor at the University of Alabama, and author of the study. But with continued moderate exercise, your body adjusts. In other words, if you're out of shape and hit the gym, your muscles will be sore. But if you continue, the soreness fades and you'll actually become stronger. Who knew tats and working out had so much in common? The researchers didn't specifically look at how long these immunity-boosting effects last, but Lynn believes that there is an extended effect, granted that you don't have an otherwise unhealthy lifestyle or experience a large environmental change, which can cause the body's stress and immune systems to be affected. Of course, we aren't recommending you head to the tattoo parlor in the name of a potentially stronger immune system, but consider this one of the ways to get those tattoo haters off your back. Now we're going to look at some actually sidebar articles from AARP, the magazine, and this is about your finances in 2021. So this one is right on the money. To stay on top of your finances, experts say make sure you can answer these questions. How much do I actually spend and make? The simplest way to figure this out, look at your bank and credit card statements for the past 6 months to see the cash flowing in and out. When do I pay the bills? Make it twice a month, says Wolfboro, New Hampshire, advisor Susan McMichael John. If you have a routine to pay bills, you are going to avoid penalties for late payment. What do I owe? Build repayment into your budget, says Kathy Curtis, a financial planner in Oakland, California. Get a personalized payback plan with AARP Money Map at moneymap.aarp.org/debt. And finally, what am I insured for? Plenty of people never look at their policy after taking it out, says New York City financial planner Gary Sketchke. They could end up wildly overinsured or wildly underinsured. And now for the remainder of our time, we're going to look at more TV shows that changed America and why streaming is challenging cable. The Crown, 2016 to the present. A deep, revealing peek inside castles and quarrels of Queen Elizabeth II, Princess Diana and company. It's fact-based, though no soap opera was ever soapier. The Handmaid's Tale, 2017 to the present. This adaptation of the 1985 novel about a future totalitarian America that sexually enslaves women caught a rising wave of real-world feminism activism. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, 2017 to the present, in the best time capsule shows since Mad Men, a posh Manhattan housewife discovers her gift for stand-up, revealing a reality very few of us were familiar with. Cops, 1989 to 2020. Black Lives Matter protests ended this much-copied show, which ran for 31 years and featured real police officers often violently busting real, often black, people. The Jerry Springer Show, 1991 to 2018. Cincinnati's ex-mayor beat Oprah Winfrey as the number one talk show host and made TV and the U.S. wilder and weirder than ever. The Real World, 1992 to the present. MTV's breakthrough documentary series turned the camera on seven strangers chosen for incompatibility to be roommates so viewers could see what happens when people stop being polite. Keeping Up with the Kardashians, 2007 to 2021. The Barrymore acting clan may have shown more talent, but the Kardashians' real-life antics are far more popular, spinning off star after star, like a puppy mill, said one comic. Shows that changed our views of women at home and at work. Let's start with I Love Lucy, 1951 to 57. Americans liked it, but it was Lucy we loved. The day after 29 million watched Eisenhower's inauguration, 44 million watched Lucille Ball's character rush to the hospital to give birth. The show, with TV's first inter-ethnic couple, Desi Arnaz, Ball's co-star and real-life husband, was Cuban-American, influenced all later sitcoms. The Mary Tyler Moore Show, 1970 to 77. She could turn the world on with her smile, yet she was TV's first woman defined by work, not a man. So Lucy's infantile wah gave way to Mary Richards, verging on tears, authority challenging Mr. Grant, Maud, 1972 to 78. Maud, B. author, was the liberal answer to Archie Bunker, debating issues from abortion to mental illness to facelifts. Murphy Brown, 1988 to 98 and 2018. Candace Bergen's TV news anchor was a boss, irritable, smart, unreasonable, uncompromising. The show commented on political events. When Vice President Don Quayle criticized Murphy for being a single mom, it became a real life. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.